You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The regular school year is wrapping up, and now the question is, how do you put the brakes on summer slide? That's when kids come back to school in the fall having forgotten things they learned the grade before. Studies find pretty much everybody falls behind academically during the summer, but low-income non-white students fall further behind than their more affluent and white peers. Overall, what do you do about it? Well, one answer might be summer school. We're going to talk about the best kind of summer learning programs and how to make them more accessible for the kids who need them the most. Catherine Augustine has done a lot of research into summer learning programs. She's a senior policy researcher for the RAND Corporation. She directs the RAND Pittsburgh office. And we should note she is a Michigander and has earned degrees at both Michigan State and the University of Michigan. Welcome.
Thank you, Cynthia. Great to be here.
Why was it important for you to study summer learning programs to the depth that you've done?
There have been evaluations of summer programs, and they don't always demonstrate that the programs themselves are effective. And as you mentioned, summer is unfortunately a time of unequal experiences and opportunities, and lower income kiddos tend to fall further behind in the summer on various measures, academically, but also in terms of opportunities to participate in clubs and sports and what have you. And so it's an opportune time to try to remedy that and try to provide programs that are of high quality, that benefit kids. You don't want to squander that opportunity. So we wanted to really dig in and see what the features of quality programs were.
For some of the more, I'll use air quotes here, vintage people among us, summer school meant that you fail a class during the year, you will do summer school and you will repeat that class. Very punitive and not seen as anything a kid would ever want to do voluntarily. How have summer learning programs evolved since, let's say, the 60s in both mission and content?
Well, there are still those kinds of summer school programs around. There are plenty of kids who still experience that.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to those, there are new kinds of summer learning programs that attempt to both provide that academic remediation or catch up or allow for an opportunity to pass a course that the child did not pass during the school year and make it more fun and engaging. So, for example, a student might have math and reading in the morning after a healthy breakfast, and then they would have lunch, and in the afternoon, they might be engaging in activities like kayaking or sailing or water polo or bike riding, something that, you know, builds other kinds of skills and interests that is paired with the academic content offered in the morning.
Ideally, how many hours, how many days a week should a student be going?
Well, it really depends on the goals of the program. If the goals are academic in nature, which those are the kinds of programs I know the most about. So if a school district is putting on a program, for example, and they want the kids to come back to school in the fall better prepared in reading and or in math, the program itself should be offered for at least 5 weeks. We've studied these programs in cities across the country and for multiple years, and we see that kids tend to attend them 70-75% of the time, and we really see a threshold in terms of learning time. If they're not getting around 25 to 35 hours of academics, they're not benefiting, and that's not surprising. It takes time to work on reading comprehension or whatever the skill is students are focusing on during the summer.
Broadly speaking, Catherine, how accessible are summer learning programs to low-income students, special ed students? Are those students less likely to have access to summer programs than more affluent students?
Well, in terms of just programs out there in the ether, absolutely. A lot of fancy camps and other kinds of summer programs have fees associated with them. We know from census data and from research coming out of Pew that low-income children are more likely to be at home during the summer. They're even less likely to be playing outdoors. You know, these kinds of programs that school districts are developing, the kinds of programs we studied, are accessible to low-income families and students with IEPs. They tend to be free, with free transportation and free meals. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not expensive to put on, But in general, you know, during the summer, low-income kids are less active in these kinds of summer programs.
They're not inexpensive. And as I think about how districts pay for summer learning programs, I know Michigan does not have a specific fund set aside for summer school, but other states do. How does that compare?
You're right. Some states do. Like in the state of Massachusetts, for example, if a school district proposes a summer program that has certain features associated with it, it can tap into state funding. In each state, there are Title I dollars, and some states allow those dollars to be used for summer programming. But, of course, the district would have to decide it wanted to use its Title I dollars that way and set aside money for the summer. So districts need to want to provide summer programs and then be creative in terms of figuring out how to fund them.
A lot of that has got to be decided right there at the district. What are the important things that you've found districts can do to make summer learning programs more accessible?
Advertise them early. Parents often start thinking about summer right around the spring break time period. So if the school district has a program that's planned by then and has, you know, brochures about it and is even talking to the kids in class during the school day, or the principal is talking to parents during drop-off and pickup time, building that awareness, talking to parents about how their summer program can help their children not only come to school prepared the next school year, but also what fun things their child will be able to experience during the summer. Getting the word out early helps to, you know, increase access and take up in these programs.
And I know you were a contributing author to the 2018 RAND book, Getting to Work on Summer Learning, Recommended Practices for Success. And I did see a point that districts need to really be intentional with regard to kind of the climate of the site, because if it's going to be more enjoyable, kids are going to show up.
Exactly. Yeah, that was an interesting finding. We had a measure of the climate of the site, so the extent to which it was warm and welcoming, the extent to which the kids appeared to be having a good day and then reported to us in surveys that they were indeed having a good day, the extent to which the sites had those characteristics, there was higher student attendance in them. And as I said earlier, students need to attend in order to benefit. Now, you could argue that having a warm and welcoming environment is important in and of itself, and I would agree with that. It just also turns out that, not surprisingly, that's, you know, if that's the case, that's where kids want to be.
Certainly. And as you talk about offering a menu of things where you're maybe doing academics in the morning and then getting them outside and doing the more fun social things in the afternoon.
Right. And Michigan's a great place for that. In the summer programs we were studying in Boston, for example, the programs were held in outdoor locations. So there was one on a nature preserve. There was actually one on an island. And so the kids would do their academics still with a certified teacher, but they were doing them in these outdoor settings.
Catherine, would we just be better off having kids go to school year-round, you know, working in those breaks between semesters, but not taking the whole summer off?
Well, there are certainly advantages to that kind of model. I know that many working parents would prefer that. So there are pros and cons. Mm. One reason to not move toward that kind of a model is low-income kids tend to be disadvantaged, and in many school districts across the country, there are mixes of kids. And so if you can use the summertime to really dig in with kids who wouldn't have that kind of opportunity otherwise and are not doing well in school, it's time well spent. You know, we've interviewed teachers who have said, you know, this has been a great experience because I got to interact with, say, Johnny, who during the school year, he's very quiet and doesn't get in trouble, but he's not performing well, and he tends to get overlooked. So summer can be a way to try to narrow disparities and gaps in achievement as well as in opportunity to activities.
Catherine Augustine's a senior policy researcher for the RAND Corporation. She directs the RAND Pittsburgh office. And we want to thank you so much for sharing your work and your research with us, Catherine.
You're welcome, Cynthia.